the CBSSports.com Ion College Basketball Podcast. Happy 2013, everyone, if you happen to be listening to this after the ball has dropped. But if you've got the desire and dedication to listen to this bad boy on December 31st, that's when we're recording this. Very much appreciated. Thanks for making 2012 a huge year for the podcast. On a personal note, you have very much increased the downloads and subscriptions on iTunes, so I can't thank you enough. Today, got two guys on the podcast who are long overdue, actually. I owed both of them big favors, and now they're returning them. So, Joe Ovius and Jim Young. Ovius is a co-host of an afternoon drive show, 99.9 The Fan in North Carolina. He's on Twitter at Joe Ovius. That is O-V-I-E-S. And Jim Young, who's the editor of ACCSports.com. He's on Twitter, follow at your own caution, at ACCSports. He's kind of a shy guy. You got to actually kind of push him to come out of his shell, particularly during games. He doesn't really like to talk too much during games. So, fellas, thanks for coming on. How you doing?
We're doing all right. How are you?
We're doing good here. You guys are obviously so proficient in the ACC realm. To me, it's the most intriguing league. So I want to not waste any time and ask you, fellas, we'll get to some specific teams and Reggie Johnson in Miami in a second, but is Duke destined to not even see a challenge in this league this year? Is this going to be, from a national perspective, I know you guys have the nice local perspective, but from a national perspective, is it going to be a relatively boring year for the ACC because Duke might be that far ahead of everyone else? I'll start with Jim.
I'm not quite ready to hand the title to Duke. I know everyone jumped off the NC State bandwagon during the Oklahoma State game, but I still think that they've got the potential to give Duke a run. I'm not, despite UNC's win over UNLV, I'm not putting them into the title picture. I also think, well, I don't know exactly what I think about Maryland. They show potential, I think, to be a dangerous team in the league, but then again, they haven't really played anybody outside of Kentucky. But, you know, I mean, Duke, if you look at them, their starting five is dynamite, and then they're bringing Josh Hairston and Tyler Thornton off the bench. So they're one, you know, injury away from being a team that's a lot more vulnerable.
I don't think it's going to be a cakewalk for Duke. They've got their first test going up against NC State on January 12th. That's going to be your first bellwether for this Blue Devils team, because NC State, as Jim said, everybody got off the bandwagon, at least the national guys. Matt, you and I have talked about this in the past. I know you called me up right before the season started when it comes to NC State. And Jim, you can back me up on this. Locally, the idea with NC State was not a hot start. It was the guys who really showed how great they could be in a small window of time in March, like C.J. Leslie, Lorenzo Brown, and Richard Howell, could mesh with this new talent that was anxious to play. Mm-hmm. Lorenzo Brown last week, actually it was Friday before the Western Michigan game on Saturday, said that they had their heads up their butts, if you will, up their rear ends at the beginning of the season when they were in Puerto Rico against that Oklahoma State team. They admitted it. They kind of got caught up in their ranking. They let it get to their head, and their play kind of, you know, showed it. They took a couple beatings, Oklahoma State. They kind of let Michigan get away from them. But from that point on, they've definitely been a dialed-in team. A lot of it's coming from Richard Howell. So January 12th is that first big test for the Blue Devils to see if they truly are head and shoulders above the rest. As far as the rest of the ACC goes, man, throw them in a hat. I don't know. Maryland has an impressive record, but they haven't really beaten anybody. Florida State, they look good on paper, and they have people who have bromances with Florida State, like Jim Young. But again, they just haven't had the marquee wins. And you got Miami dealing with injury issues now with Reggie Johnson. They're just not going to be the team that everybody thought it was going to be. So I think it's a two-horse race right now in the ACC between the Wolfpack and the Blue Devils.
Okay. I'd agree with that to an extent. I do think Duke will win this league largely unchallenged, and I'll qualify that by saying it'll be like a two-game. There'll be a two-game margin.
You're not a big NC State believer, though, man. Is that fair to say?
To a certain extent, yes, because I need to see more. Like, I've been a big Lorenzo Brown fan for majority of the past two seasons, but he has not been as good as he's needed to be. C.J. Leslie is the prototypical you watch him, you like him, you get frustrated, you check the numbers, and you're like, damn, where's it all going? Like, he should be better than he is. And he's good, don't get me wrong, but to me, I watch CJ Leslie play, and I'm like, if he had the drive, desire, motor, however you want to qualify it, and the means, he could be a first-team All-American. He's not going to be that this year, so it's a little frustrating. Purvis, I got to see more of. I mean, listen, I like NC State in general, but I try and qualify these arguments as saying I just don't like NC State within the realm of saying this is a team that's going to be worthy of a 3 seed. I think they're going to be closer to a 4 or a 5, and I don't think that they'll...
Hold up. Where was all this in the preseason?
Well, no, that's not fair, Joe, because you're allowed to have notions in the preseason, and then once you actually see a team play 12 games like NC State, and granted, I haven't seen all 12, but I've seen plenty on Synergy, and I've seen, you know, 3 or 4 live. They still look good. Their offense is awesome in general. In fact, they're the best two-point shooting team in the country. They're shooting 58% from the field.
Right now is off the charts 10 times.
They're awesome. Listen, but
and you didn't mention T.J. Warren when you're running down the list of guys. He's got one of the how shall I put this? Not the prettiest stroke.
It goes in.
For some reason, they're going.
Goes in, man.
It goes in, and that's all you can really ask for. And he's got a lot of old man game about him that's really impressive to watch in person. Again, this is a, you know, Gottfried has talked about this openly. It's about the process of getting everybody together. You're right about Leslie. You're absolutely right about Leslie. There's something that needs to click with that guy.
I don't think it will.
He needs the other team to kind of give him the fire under his rear to get going. Western Michigan did that on Saturday before he went off because they couldn't stop talking trash to him. And eventually he got frustrated by it. Then he went off. Why he can't do that for 40 minutes is a mystery in and of itself. Maybe there's a motor there I'm not so sure about. But once they're motivated, that's a really, really good team. I just got to see when it actually happens.
Two other things, well, it's three things I think that give me reservations, or just give fans. One of them is the, and this actually doesn't have anything to do with this team, but just from an NC State fan perspective, there's similar parallels in terms of strong finish, lots of heralded freshmen coming in, chemistry thing, which happened in 2008 with Sidney Lowe. Now, this is not Sidney Lowe. I think Mark Godfrey is way better equipped to deal with it. But that's just one of those things that's out there. People watch to see how Rodney Purvis is handling his minutes and how T.J. Warren's handling coming off the bench and that sort of thing. And then also there's the matter of defense. We talked about their offense, but the defense is – I mean, who on that team is really a shutdown defender? Yeah. And Lorenzo Brown maybe could be, and C.J. Leslie, of course, with everything else, if he puts his mind to it. But that's the big if that comes up then. And then there's the matter of what Mark Godfrey did when he had a number one team at Alabama, and it took a massive nosedive in the middle of the season. So he hasn't exactly shown that he has a track record of taking a team that's much hype and delivering them through all of that pressure and living up to expectations. So I understand the reservations about NC State. That's why I almost think the Oklahoma State game did them a favor, because it got those expectations out, you know, national. I think a lot of people nationally like, okay, whatever. And that's going to allow them to quietly build themselves back up. To me, the key guy on that team is Richard Howell, because they need that kind of guy. They have a lot of talent, but they need that kind of to go Seth Davis on you, you need a glue guy. And to me, Richard Howell is absolutely that guy.
The problem is he can't stop taking bad fouls. Now, if you believe Joe Giulio of the News and Observer, it depends on the officiating crew that's out there. Joe's been keeping track. And Matt, this is something to keep an eye on from the national perspective. State fans, you asked me this earlier at the beginning of the season, how State fans were going to treat this season. State fans have been in wait-and-see mode, but the one thing that State fans will always be livid about will be the officiating. Now, all teams go through this, don't get me wrong, but State fans, when you've got Duke and Carolina right up the way, and they're convinced that they get all the calls, and you've got the Carl Hess business, you've got Roger Ayers having teed up Richard Howell twice last year, teeing up. I mean, there's a rule in the ACC now about removing your jacket, because Mark Godfrey did this and Roger Ayers was the guy.
Are you kidding me?
Doing the teeing up.
What's the rule with the jacket?
Oh, you need to what you need to do now is you cannot just remove an article of clothing when you're like disagreeing with someone.
You gotta be kidding me.
So I don't remember hearing about this.
Yeah, you know, that was in the beginning. That was in the it was in Greensboro.
Oh God, I must have blacked out during
this part. You must have been blacked out.
You might have been tweeting.
So if you remove your jacket when your team's doing well, it's okay? Is that the thing?
Yeah, or? Basically, if you use the jacket removal as part of, like, your demonstrative disagreeing with a call, they'll tee you up.
Hilarious.
I just can't believe I don't remember this.
I think Jim sides with me in general with this stuff. Like, when it comes to officiating, like, you'll almost never find me bitching about it because every team gets the good and every team gets the bad, right?
I'm with you on that, Matt. I'm totally with you. I think it's the most overblown thing that goes into the game.
But to get back to my original point, you look at Giulio, how he's been keeping track of this, and when Stanford came through and they had a Pac-12 officiating crew at the PNC Arena, Richard Howell was allowed to play. When an ACC crew was covering the game last season on the West Coast, there were like 34-some-odd fouls. The ACC has a weird tendency of keeping track of how a guy typically plays or looking for things every day.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, has the reputation of taking dumb fouls away from the basket. He fouled out again against Western Michigan, and it's no coincidence that Roger Ayers was on the floor for that game.
I do think that's fair to say. I mean, I'm with you, Matt, that in general, it's not something I pay attention to. But I do think that guys develop reputation.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's fair to say that Richard Howell, you know, through his own hard work, has developed the reputation as being a foul-prone guy. So I think it's probably fair to say that an ACC crew might be quicker with a whistle, Richard Howell, than other leagues. And I also think that, you know, there's different standards of physical play and from league to league. And I think sometimes you see that you get the NCAA tournament and you get out of, you know, the refs that know you and know how you play. And sometimes teams that typically aren't in foul trouble will get into it or vice versa. I think that's fair to say.
Joe, what about Maryland? This is why I find the ACC so intriguing, because right now, for anyone listening that's kind of paid attention but knows Duke's at the top of the league, UNC's not quite as strong, Maryland's coming on, they're waiting to see on NC State. Here's how the league is right now. Duke's 12-0, Virginia is 10-3, NC State 10-2, UNC is 10-3 coming off a win against Vegas. We'll get to that after we talk about Maryland. Miami's 8-3 with an injury. We'll get to that in just a few minutes. Maryland's 11-1. Tech is 9-2. FSU 8-4, a bit of an enigma. Then you get into Vatek's had a decent season. They're 9-4. Clemson 7-4, nothing. BC 7-5, and Wake, you know, forget about their afterthoughts. I refuse to let you guys even broach those topics on this podcast. But that's what the ACC is. It is an intriguing league with a bunch of teams that we just don't quite know yet, and that's a little different from a lot of other leagues because the non-conference has given us a good idea of what the SEC is, of what the Big Ten is, of even what the Big East is, and the Big 12 and the Pac-12. Even conferences like the Valley, the A-10, the Mountain West, we have a very good idea with a lot of these teams. With the ACC, we simply just don't know on a lot of these. So with Maryland, I put at the top of that list. They've only lost one game. That first game was against Kentucky on a neutral in Brooklyn. Since then, they've reeled off 11 straight, but it hasn't been a great schedule, Joe. Their best wins are Northwestern and George Mason. You've got Alex Len, who might be the number one pick. We'll see. It depends on the day. Your impressions of this team, and I guess around the league, around your area, how are people viewing Maryland? A team on the come that's good for a 6 or 7 seed, or are they still a year away and we're expecting maybe some stumbles in league play?
Well, to be honest with you, I don't think anybody in this area cares about Maryland anymore because they're a Big Ten team.
Okay, I know. Fair point. I know. Let's just play out the clock here, though. Yeah, I know what you mean.
No, in all seriousness, I think that the Kentucky loss is the only thing that's keeping people from really falling in love with Maryland. It's even though Kentucky's not this vintage Kentucky team or this juggernaut that they were last year on their way to a national championship, they still carry that weight. They've got that aura about them. And had they actually topped them there at the Izod Center, they probably would be viewed as they would be ranked at this point. I mean, they're not even ranked this week. They'll get their first test on January 5th, on Saturday, against Virginia Tech, a team that has surprised people at the start of the season. They've actually had a pretty good run about them. But
The run is over.
They kind of surprise people. I get what you're saying, Jim. But you would agree, though, that they got Virginia Tech, Florida State, and at Miami to start off the ACC season before they take on NC State in the middle of January. Those are teams that they should beat considering the roster that they have, right?
Yep. Totally agree.
Okay. Wow, that was quick.
Dynamite drop in there, man. This is why I brought you on the podcast.
Jim, I wasn't aware this was a radio move on your part.
So. Sorry, I'm feeling a little. I was actually going to commend. I don't have a show today, so I have to throw it to somebody. But you would agree that the only thing that's keeping Maryland Love back is that one loss against Kentucky. The rest of the slate is a bunch of no names. Until they play somebody, you're just going to have to fall in love with the roster.
That's what's holding them back, is that they haven't played anybody since. Kentucky also then going into a nosedive after that.
Yes.
Maryland's almost win looks a lot less impressive. The thing that, for me, that's holding back a little bit with Maryland is their ball handling. They got Lynn, is, as Matt mentioned, he's a lottery pick, possible top five guy, but he's also a turnover machine. Other than Pashawn Howard, there's not really guys on that team that you trust to handle the ball. They've got an unbelievable rebound margin advantage, but one of the reasons they've got that is because they don't miss a whole lot of shots because they're either making them or they're not getting a chance to shoot because they're turning it over. So,
all right, first of all,
I want to commend Matt on basically segueing right into the column we had on the site today, basically saying, and the title of it is ACC still anybody's guess? It's just we've gone through the non-conference schedule, and there's just so few answers that have been provided. Florida State looks like they're doing a very Florida State-type thing, which is several inexplicable non-conference losses, and then they get it together and do actually better in the ACC than they do in non-conference schedule. Virginia is a team that I admit I have a bromance with Tony Bennett, but my God, losing to Old Dominion, I don't care whether Jontel Evans is healthy or not. That's just awful. I mean, just an awful loss. And my fear is that teams like that, and that Clemson and Brad Brownell gets them playing a little bit better, are going to be teams that are going to win games and anchor everybody else's RPI later on in the ACC season.
All right, first of all, Jim Young mentions a rebound margin. I need like an alarm. I'm not going to let you just drop rebound margin and pretend like it ain't like the dumbest stat ever here. But
I was pointing out why that's a disadvantage.
Oh, I know. Hey, but listen, their offensive rebound percentage is sixth best in the country. And you mentioned the turnovers. They don't turn people over, and they turn it over a lot. We're referring to Maryland here. Certainly room for concern there. But I just had to call you on a rebound margin. All in jest.
Exactly why, you're right. That's why they're not – the other team's getting to take shots. Maryland's not getting to take as many shots, and therefore – but it does give you an idea. They're sort of like the Michigan State of the ACC. Well, actually, I'd say Georgia Tech would be that, obviously. But same sort of thing. They rebound the heck out of the ball.
Like with Duke, they don't rebound the ball at all. Duke historically does not rebound the ball, and that's the one thing everybody wants to nitpick on. I would sweat it if I'm a Duke fan.
Okay. Miami is an interesting test case here now. Reggie Johnson is out for 6 weeks with a bad thumb. Miami's dropped two in a row to Arizona and then to an Indiana State team who's actually not that bad, to be honest. I mean, you hear Indiana State, you think, eh. They're not that bad, actually. They've reeled off some good wins. But
I know they're not, but that game was just infuriating. I'm sure, Matt, you would probably already, whatever it is you do to weed out my tweets during those games, but it was just—it's
just white noise at certain
filter on ACC sports at that point. But
are we just going to gloss over the Florida Gulf Coast loss too?
No, I'm glossing over that one because they didn't have Duran Scott in that one, and Florida Gulf Coast is actually not half bad. But that Indiana State game—the thing to me was just infuriating—was just how bad they were offensively. I mean, it was Shane Larkin dribble around for 30 seconds. I mean, the total inability to do stuff like set up pick and rolls with Kenny Kaji, which you would think would be a great weapon, was just mind-blowing to me. And then Kenny Kaji's being guarded by a 6'5" guy in the post. And it was like, it reminded me of the Georgia Tech days when Derek Favors was there and they never threw the ball down to the low post to him. It just blew my mind. So that I'm so down on Miami based on that performance alone right now. I'm not sure I can rationally talk about them.
Joe, you're down on Miami as well, but for listeners, here's why they're going to be an interesting test case. They didn't have Duran Scott when they lost to Florida Gulf Coast. Now they're not going to have Reggie Johnson for 6 weeks. We'll see what they do in a stretch where they're going to have Carolina on the road, home to Maryland, home to Duke. They'll probably have to play Florida State at home without them, and then we'll see once we get into February. But they do have a win home. It's not going to be a good one over Detroit. They did beat Michigan State. That's the big one for Miami, the one that'll have some cachet. But you're not thinking, this Hurricanes team is as good as some were believing, even prior to the past two losses.
Yeah, I mean, I was starting to believe in this, particularly when they just beat, and I know Charlotte's not that good, but they beat the absolute snot out of Charlotte, and I was starting to think they were really kind of to get it rolling. I'm starting to think that Miami fools us a little bit because you go through their lineup and go, that guy's pretty good. That guy's pretty good. That guy's pretty good.
Thank you for bringing that up, Jimmy.
And they got a lot of pretty good guys, but they don't have an elite guy on that team. And I think that eventually, you know, unless you get all your pretty good guys all clicking, which Miami rarely does, then you're not nearly as dangerous as maybe you appear on paper.
This happens to us every ACC basketball media day, Jim. You know, we kind of look at the – I'm glad you brought up that roster because everybody looks at the roster and you start to fall in love with it. I mean, I'm surprised we haven't even mentioned Kenny Kaji yet at any point in this because that's another guy that people tend to fall in love with.
I mentioned they weren't throwing him in the low post.
Yeah, he did. No, we got one Kaji reference in, so we're good.
The guy's never healthy. He went through all this stuff last year too, and then when he finally gets back on the court, he's out of shape. Maybe it's because we've seen Miami look the part, at least on the roster, and they never really back it up with results that I'm in show me mode with Miami. Florida State's the opposite of that in that they've always had a roster where people kind of find gems in that roster. Michael Snare is, you want to talk about bromance. Everybody has a bromance with Michael Snare. Mm-hmm. And we thought that they had that breakthrough with the ACC tournament, that maybe they can finally just get this thing rolling. They can finally be a consistent team in the ACC. And we just haven't seen that yet.
Go ahead.
In the ACC, they're not consistent non-conference, which again, does the ACC no favors. They go and they lose these type of games to Mercer and South Alabama, and then they'll probably end up being something, you know, like a 12-win team in the ACC, and that doesn't actually do the ACC any favors. That seems to be the issue. I mean, that's the one of the, you know, the perils of college basketball is so much, your conference is going to be judged by what you do in November and December, which, you know, is kind of comical, but that's the only, you know, apples to apples comparison you can make when it comes down to, you know, NCAA tournament selection stuff, and that the ACC quite frankly hasn't really gotten it done in non-con.
No, they haven't. They've been better than, say, the SEC. I mean, I still think – I mean, and the ACC overall is still –
Well, yes, that's true.
I know. Well, and the ACC is still overall, like, number three or number four in most, you know, overall metrics for Sagarin, RPI, Ken Pom, and all that. So
how much of that is Duke? You know what I mean? How much of that is Duke helping?
I think Duke definitely carries a lot, but I think in general, when you're still looking at a 12-team league, you know, or in not just ACC, I'm talking, but 10, 12, 14-team league, it's hard for one team, even two teams, to really rise the tide of all boats. So Duke helps. I don't think they're solely the reason. I mean, listen, ACC has top 80 teams except for Vatek, Boston College, and Wake Forest on KenPom, which is certainly very solid, but to me it remains an enigma. So we'll segue to this. We'll go to Joe first and then Jim. Just for fun, here on December 31st, I want NCAA tournament predictions for who's getting in. We don't need to go seeds and all that stuff, but give me who's in definitively, draw the line, how many teams and who's going. Joe, you go first.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, that's right. We're going there, guys. We are going there.
Who's in? Duke and NC State are definitely in, okay? Maryland will be in. I want to think Georgia Tech will be in. And then the great mystery – and Florida State will be in as well. So we're up to what?
Five.
Wow. And you haven't named North Carolina yet.
North Carolina's the enigma. That's what I was counting up to five. There's five teams that I can see getting into the NCAA tournament. The sixth will be Carolina. And that's the enigma because we just don't – I'm surprised it's taken us 20 minutes to actually get around to talking about it.
Well, I'm saving the best slash worst for last there with Carolina.
Yeah, that's fair enough.
Yeah.
They're actually one of the more fascinating discussions in the ACC right now.
Yeah.
Carolina, unfortunately –
Oh, hold on. Let's get Jim's teams first there.
I was going to say, Joe.
I'm sorry.
Look at radio host there holding court trying to take over the pod here.
I'm sorry.
I got to whip him into shape. Go ahead, Jim. Give me your six.
Although, to be fair, if you had just completely glossed over and not allowed me, not forced me to do this sort of picking.
You would have been cool with it, yeah.
Obviously, I'm assuming we're doing this in vacuum in terms of I have no idea how many, you know, ACC team, NCAA tournament teams the Pac-12 is going
right.
to
Right. Total vacuum. Like total vacuum.
In terms of quality, in terms of a team that I think would be NCAA tournament worthy by the time March goes by. With Duke and State, yes. I think at UNC is NCAA tournament worthy, you know, come March. Maryland, same thing. You know, it's interesting Joe mentioned Georgia Tech. I like them a lot. They don't really have the non-conference resume right now, but I think they're a team that will actually put it together, and I think they could be a potential NCAA tournament team by the time, you know, March rolls around. I think Florida State does as well. But that's kind of, you know, out of that group, you know, maybe one of those two does. I'm thinking it's a five-bid league.
All right.
You're going to put Georgia Tech in over Miami?
Yeah, because of Reggie Johnson. Yeah. I mean, you can discount and all that sort of stuff, you know, how you do. But when you're out basically for, like, the first half of the ACC season, you know, unless they can go, you know, 3-5 or whatever and then turn it around and go, like, 6-1 or 6-2 and that sort of thing, I think they're probably in trouble.
All right.
Matt, your colleague, Jerry Palm, has the ACC as a five-bid league. He's got Miami in it. I'm assuming this was done before the injury to Reggie Johnson.
It was. Yeah, that went up, like, we're recording this on a Monday. I think that went up last Thursday. Okay. So.
Well, in the world of RPI, Miami is certainly a favorite.
I know.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, God. Let's not go RPI right now. I want to end the year on a good I'd like to end the year and start the next one on a good note, please. Oh, boy. All right, let's as promised, go to UNC. Ovius, you have the floor. I'll set you up like this. You know, I wrote about Carolina 9 or 10 days ago about expectations with the team with McAdoo. Said they basically had to win against Vegas. They did. They still didn't impress me, by the way. The way they won, I mean, they won, but I didn't really come away thinking that much more about Carolina. So your overall impressions of this team and what those around you, the region fans or writers or whatever, think of UNC this year so far?
Well, first and foremost, they didn't need to impress you. The bottom line with that game.
Okay, now I'm not saying like they had to impress me. Yeah, I know they had to win. I'm not saying like, oh, they did not impress.
Right.
I totally get you there.
The big thing with Carolina was not whether they needed to impress anybody, not just you. It was just they needed that win because we're talking about confidence at this point, and confidence was pretty low heading into that contest. I mean, after the Texas game, you had Roy Williams and others talking about players buying in. That's never a good
sign. Oh, God, yeah.
To a flashback of 2010 when you had a split in the team. The young guys who thought they were rock stars, and then you had Deion Thompson and Marcus Guignard going, you guys ain't done nothing. So we all remember how that ended in the NIT. Here's Carolina's problem. They're Duke without Duke's shooting. You can't be Duke, live by the three, die by the three, a classic Duke team, I should clarify, and not have good shooters. And when P.J. Harrison's the guy that's taking a bulk of shots, and you get your own hashtag, P.J. be shooting, that's a good look. You also have James Michael McAdoo, who was 3 on the depth chart when it came to big guys you had to be concerned about last year. He can come in and press for 10 minutes at a time, and nobody ever really had to worry about covering him. Now he's got everybody focused on him. And he's having a hard time breaking through. He's been labeled, and Jim, I'm sure you've caught this. Note, I'm throwing it to you now. James Michael McAdoo, for his all the NBA scout love that he gets, Carolina fans have been harsh on this dude, calling him soft the entire season. There have been times where he's not asserted himself. He's going to have to do that once they get up against more physical teams in the ACC.
See, if we'd done this as like a Google Hangout, I could have seen you sort of nod toward me.
I would have pointed at you.
I'm nodding right now, guys. I'm nodding right now.
Yeah, McAdoo, and part of it's unfair. Part of it is simply, again, people drawing 2010 comparisons, and McAdoo is playing the role of Ed Davis and those sort of things. But part of it is McAdoo's body language, and he's not – the big thing is he's not your classic UNC back-to-the-basket, low-post horse. And that's the interesting thing for me to watch is Roy Williams has typically had a jet at point guard and a low post horse on his successful teams, and he has neither this season. And how are they adjusted to it? And Joe mentioned it, and I said it several times. It's like bizarro world in which Duke is dumping the ball in the low post to Mason Plumlee, and North Carolina's got wings out the yin yang all jacking up threes. The big key to me for them is they're just going to have to, they've been a team that can just outscore you and play enough defense to win because their offense was their defense. They put so much pressure on you by simply scoring so often and so efficiently that your defense, your own offense eventually cracks under that pressure. And this season, you saw the end of that UNLV game, and they, like 3 or 4 possessions in a row ended up with either Marcus Page or Dexter Strickland taking an off-balance jumper with 1 second on the shot clock. But they held on to that lead because they played defense. And they're going to have to do that this season to get those wins. It certainly helped that UNLV played the dumbest offense this side of Miami against Indiana State in that game. But that's they're going to have to get a little dirty, you know, and that's not North Carolina's typical style to do that. Did that get through to them with that game, or do they turn right back around the next game and kind of revert to form? I don't know. I guess part of it is I'm still kind of going over an overall track record with Roy Williams and North Carolina and just kind of assuming they'll do enough. There's still a lot of talent on that team that they'll do enough to be an NCAA tournament team.
Doesn't feel like this is going to be a 2010 redux, but so I'll say they're going to get to the tournament. Just uninspired by watching them play. I've never shied away from the fact that sometimes they're just players that I don't get. I just don't get how McAdoo's a top 10 pick. Some thought he was a top 5 pick. I watch him play, and I simply can't interpret that.
And North Carolina has that sort of tradition of the sixth man from the previous year.
Right, of course. But you knew Marvin Williams, you could see. Like, Marvin Williams, for all his limited action, like, you could see, like, his talent. To me, McAdoo's a different kind of player altogether, and I just don't get it. Like, I watch him. I can see he's good. He's got a, you know, good body, has skill. But in terms of him being anywhere near a top 10 pick, he just doesn't have it. And to me, he's not an alpha. He doesn't have the talent around him to reinforce his ability.
You're right, though. He is not an alpha, and that's yes. I think he's a great complimentary guy. And I think that's part of the struggle is he's supposed to be the alpha on that team, and there is no alpha on that team. And that's so now they're kind of doing it by committee. And can they do that? I think in the ACC they're going to be able to do that often enough to get enough wins, but. But it makes them a much less dangerous team.
Oh, they'll still sweep NC State. I mean,
okay, yeah, well, naturally. Nice. A nice little dig in there at State Fan. We could not escape the podcast without that. Hey, guys, this was great. What are you guys doing for New Year's? How are you ringing in 2013?
Well, it just depends on at what point I've turned off the Chick-fil-A Bowl in disgust as Clemson is getting rolled over by LSU at that point. And then that's about it for me, man. I got two kids and a Twitter account. That's pretty much all I need.
Are you going to – well, do the kids, are you going to let them stay up till midnight, or are they still young enough where, you know, in bed by 10?
My son is going to give out. There's no doubt about it. He's going to say, I'm tired. He's going to go to bed. My daughter absolutely, despite my best efforts, will be up to midnight. I'm sure of it.
What about you?
I smell a Beck parody, Jim. Two kids and a Twitter account.
Nice.
Oh, God.
You could be a YouTube sensation with that, my man.
Oh, Lord.
That's good stuff.
Please.
Ovius, what are you doing down there in the triangle tonight?
No, Raleigh's got a thing called First Night.
Oh, that's very original.
We drop an acorn in Raleigh.
How big is this acorn? How big is it?
High would have been.
I'm picturing something out of Spinal Tap. How big is this acorn?
It's funny,
I drew it up on a napkin, Matt.
My former radio station, 850 The Buzz, the owner of that radio station actually owned that acorn for a while till the city actually bought it from them. But what they do is they put it on a crane. It's about 20 feet high, 20 feet wide, you know, about that size.
Solid corn right there.
Thing.
Yeah.
So they put it on a crane. They take it downtown on Fayetteville Street, and they just kind of drop it with the countdown and everything with a band, and that's where I'll be. I'll be doing the kid version, though. I'll be there at 7 o'clock.
But is it, like, gently eased into the earth? I don't get, like, when the ball drops, it's like atop a building.
Perfect way of putting it. It's gently eased onto the ground.
I'm not a New Year's Eve guy. I don't get it.
It's amateur hour. I mean, we all agree.
It's absolutely amateur hour. I mean, well, I'm going to I'm 31 now. Once you pass like 25 or 26, you really realize that, you know, it's just not worth it. So I'm just going to a buddy's house. It's going to be like four couples. We're going to just, you know, bring food and just, you know, easy night, nothing too nuts, and maybe play some Tri-Poo if I can bring some Trivial Pursuit over. But the problem is, like, no one ever wants to play Trivial Pursuit, and they think I'm some sort of, like, trivia.
Oh, I get it too, Matt.
They think I'm some sort of trivia Nazi. I'm like, no, I just want to play a damn game here. And they're like, no, you get too competitive. And I really don't. That's the whole thing is you can't be the one that suggests to play the game because then everyone thinks that, you know.
Yeah, you got to have somebody else. You got to have a plan to do that.
I know.
And it's not competitive. You're just better than everybody else, right?
Before,
you know what I mean?
Before we get out of here, though, with the wrap-up 2012, Mr. Music Avatar of the month.
Yes.
I need your top five albums, bro.
Oh boy. Well, first of all, I need to know what our resident Rush expert thought of this year's release, Clockwork Angels. Where would you? I need you to rank that overall. Rush has what, like 16 records at this point?
Dude, I told you I'm on a 3-year delay. That includes Rush as well.
Holy crap! You have not even listened. You have not listened.
I do not own every single Rush album. I don't, so I cannot give you a review of Clockwork Angels. I mean, I love Rush, but I've been meh on Rush for, you know, their releases for, gosh, I don't know, the last 6-7 years.
Well, this one actually got some serious love. I listened to it a couple times. It's good, but thanks for...
I wonder if that's sort of the effect of suddenly people figured out 30, 40 years in that this is probably a pretty good band.
Right, finally got to the rock and roll Hall of Fame.
I mean, they're a weird band in that regard. I mean, they're like the world's largest cult band.
They really are.
It's kind of weird. I don't know. My hunch is probably this album's kind of is probably all right, but people are like, hey, this band's actually pretty good.
Jim, of the songs that I gave you a mixed CD of, which ones were your favorite this year?
Well, we're going that way.
You haven't given me a mixed this year.
Very romantic.
No, you know what? I gave my last mixed CD to the Devil Wolf. My bad.
Oh, it hurts.
Well, he was jealous that I – true story, Matt. I give local media people mixed CDs.
I'm totally down with that. One of my editors actually sent me one surprise in the mail. He had like a whole 2012 mix. I was like, damn, all right, I'll take this. So it was good.
I will say I finally got onto Kasabian.
First of all, Kasabian is awesome. That's for those listening, that's a band from across the pond with some aggressive pop tendencies that is definitely worth it, but was big in like 2003. Yeah. So welcome to the party, Jim Young. Okay.
Is that for Phoenix as well?
Phoenix also fantastic. Also kind of hit its crescendo in 2009. So welcome to the party again. All right, top five albums. This is tough. I don't know. I would say my favorite album this year is from a band whose name I hate, and that is Tame Impala.
Oh, great album.
Lonerism. Oh, album is awesome. Awesome. Got this, like...
This is just going out the roof.
Oh, right now, I mean, people listen to this podcast...
I'm taking furious notes right now.
I'll make you a CD, Jim.
3 years from now, I'm going to be all over this.
Oh, yeah, this is good. I would say this is in no... Tame Impala is my favorite. The rest are in no order. I would say Alabama Shakes, Boys and Girls is in there. I would say... Cloud Nothings is Attack on Memory... I would say, I would say, The Lumineers, self-titled, was pretty good. Oh, you're not down on The Lumineers? Oh, don't be an anti-hipster. And then I would say Shields by Grizzly Bear, but I want to qualify this by saying I'm a shameless and proud, massive DMB fan, so... I really enjoyed their release Away from the World, but I've been such like my synapses are fused. Like I'm so hardcore into DMB that I can't even appropriately rank their albums in regard to everyone else because, you know, it's almost like, you know, your first love is your final love. So I also enjoyed that. That would be some sort of list of mine. By the way, I like the Frank Ocean Channel Orange, and that
I was waiting for that one to come in.
Well, no, I really like that one. It probably wouldn't be it wouldn't be in my top five, but
not. I actually like Miguel's Kaleidoscope more than Frank Ocean's album, but that's just me.
Okay.
But I'll tell you, I have listened to Frank Ocean.
Well, the Ocean one, real quick before Obvious goes, the Ocean one I found was interesting because I think this is the first year in like it feels like 6 to 10 years where that is clearly, like every single list says that's the best album. I don't remember the last time that was the case. Mm-hmm. So I thought that was interesting. Go ahead, Joe.
I usually do mine in the categories because I listen to way too much music. In the
you can never listen to too much
people
music.
People who think rock is dead but should actually pay attention to what's going on today category.
Mm-hmm.
I would put in the Grizzly Bear, but I would also throw in Japandroids.
Okay, I like that one.
Does that count, guys?
That one counts.
That I like that one, but everything's like turned. Listen, there's nothing wrong with this, but that one, like everything is turned up to 11, and like one song bleeds into the next. Okay. I enjoyed it, but not as much as I wanted.
I'm with Matt on that one. I was like, wow, this is great. Six songs in, I was like, wow, this is starting to sound very familiar.
Yeah.
It does pound you, but again, that's some good rock music. From the hip-hop and R&B category, I told you I like Miguel's record over Frank Ocean's, and Kendrick Lamar's Good Kid, Mad City record is a very – it's not just – you know, you could go one or two ways with hip-hop. You can either listen to Cruel Summer by Kanye West and his little posse album and listen to ear candy like Mercy, or you can actually listen to a record that warrants repeat listening so you can pick up on new things, new production, how they handle that stuff. And Kendrick Lamar's record's really, really good in that regard. It's a very, very good record. I suggest everybody pick that one up.
Okay.
And then, like, my summer jam, Jimmy Cliff put out a record this year called Rebirth, which that is fire up the Weber, turn up your outside player of whatever you have, a Bose or whatever you might have, turn that up, and that'll pretty much have everybody's heads bobbing while you're grilling out on your Weber. So, I mean, I listened to way too much music this year. I think the one record that probably disappointed me the most. Oh, one last category, the Too Tight Jeans category.
Yeah.
For your hipster cred.
Yes.
Would be the Twin Shadow album.
Did not hear that one yet.
Yes, that one is like the best Depeche Mode record put out this year by a band not called Depeche Mode.
Okay.
So if you haven't listened to that one, you'll want to.
What let done? What no? What let you down? What let you were going to say? What
you beyond geeked out?
What no? What let you? What record? Oh, by the way, yeah, this is running long, but I don't care. We'll wrap up in a second. What record let you down, Joe? You were going to say
the record that let me down would actually be the XX this year.
Oh, I like that one actually. You didn't like it?
They clearly the first record was such a breath of fresh air and how they it was an intimate record. This one, I put it like this. The first record was two goth kids having their own little insider club about how much they like wanted to do it with each other, okay?
Naturally.
The second record was a couple goth kids that actually went into the, oh my God, I don't know how to express myself. And it got really kind of annoying with the kind of trite lyrics that didn't really say a lot. But I like the first one. The Coexist.
Coexist is the new one,
good,
yeah.
Good tracks, don't get me wrong. But it was slightly disappointing.
Okay, I enjoyed it. I would say check out Angels from Coexist off the XX. That's the lead track. It's a really good one. And
yeah, that's the best track off that album.
My biggest disappointment was the Band of Horses record. That one let me down. Jack White's was okay. I mean, it was all right. But there are, I mean, listen, I could run down. There are just so many records. I couldn't get to all of them. But like, I'm trying to think of one or two more I want to pass on to listeners. Dirty Projectors, Swing Low Magellan was solid. And, oh, the Avett Brothers, The Carpenter. I thought that was pretty good. It wasn't their best, but I thought it was a... That's right. NC Boys right there. Hey, fellas, this was good. Jim, I very much appreciate your input on all things music. Thank you so much.
Like I said, just taking notes.
Yeah, there we go. Hey, now you fellas were...
Didn't even listen to the new Muse record this year?
That was a massive, oh, God.
See, you know, this is how I roll.
A mistake.
I don't pay for music, man. And so, but Spotify does allow me now to start to listen to stuff more current, because before I just got to wait for it to come out.
Yeah, I put out on Spotify.
In the library, which, by the way, the library had Japan Android, so there you go.
Yeah, I put out a top 50 tracks that I enjoyed this year on Spotify as well. Of course, my number one song of the year, easily, YN Rich Kids. Hot Cheetos and Takis.
Dad, I think we can all agree.
That's a hell of a way to end the 2012 podcast. Fellas, you were great. Follow these guys on Twitter. They are sincerely very funny, good follows, very informative on all things ACC, snark, and pop culture. At ACC Sports and at Joe Ovies, O-V-I-E-S. Fellas, you were great. Stay safe tonight. We'll talk to you more in the new year, and thanks again.
Thanks.